Coming up, I got Tim Legler and Jared Weiss talking about the Knicks and the Spurs. How do the Knicks win the series? How do the Spurs win the series? That's all coming up right now. All right, now joining me to preview the NBA Finals from ESPN, it's Tim Legler. Tim, how are you doing?
I'm great. Good to be with you.
All right, so we're going to talk about what needs to happen if the Knicks win the NBA Finals. So first question for you. If the Knicks win the Finals, what's the story of the series?
I think the story of the series is that they were able, I think, three-point shooting is going to be a huge part of the series. I think their volume is going to be up. They're going to have to make their share. I think one of the storylines, if they win it, will be Knicks three-point shooting. Like, that's coming out of games in which they win, because I just think against the Spurs team, the way that the Knicks have been operating their offense, which has been historic in the postseason, particularly during this run, 11 games, points in the paint at a premium for them. It's a lot harder to come by against this team. So where does it come from? Even transition points, which the Knicks have dominated, harder to come by against this team. So then where do you make that up? For me, it's a three-point shooting. I think it's an area that you can attack the Spurs. And those guys are going to have to step into and make them the confidence. And it's all of them across the board. I know Josh Hart's going to get his share because of the way they're going to kind of basically concede that shot early and see how that feels for him. But it's everybody. It's OG Anunoby, Karl-Anthony Towns. I think his shots per game is going to have to go up in this series. And they're going to have to make their share to make the Spurs pay for loading up on the paint the way they do.
We saw during their regular season matchups, granted it's not the same as what it will be in the finals, Wemby sometimes just straight up ignoring Josh Hart.
Yeah.
So I'd imagine they're going to try to use him in action sometimes to get Wemby directly involved in this series. For Josh Hart, I would imagine he needs to have a massive series. He needs to be their Andre Iguodala. Should he win MVP? That type of thing, right?
Look, I think as being on the broadcast, I think, yes. I think for the Knicks to win, we're going to have to be saying Josh Hart's name a lot.
Yes.
In a good way. And I think him directly involved as the ball screener, you're going to see that if Wemby's guarding him. The most ball screens he set in the game, I believe, was against the Spurs when they employed this strategy, because when you set the screen and Wemby's guarding you, and Brunson comes off that screen, you're engaging Wemby to guard that and to be further out on the court. And now the ball, and then he can slip out, Josh, to the three-point line. Brunson can reverse it to that side of the floor. Wemby's starting at a position now from 25 to 30 feet, rotating back to the lane. You've at least got him out of the paint initially. Now you got to win those two-on-ones and three-on-twos on the weak side. And maybe that's as simple as just kicking it to Josh Hart for a shot. But the best way for Josh to attack that coverage is to go be an initial ball screener for Jalen Brunson to engage Wemby and force him to have to play that ball screen.
What are some of the things you see the Spurs do defensively to keep Wemby as the low man on defense?
Yeah, I think what they're really good at, and it's incredible, his maturity and leadership as a backline defender. Those are the guys that have everything in front of them and they could see. So when he's edge of the lane and Josh Hart's down there and Josh Hart goes up to set the screen and Wemby starts to run up there with him, he's really good at on the fly grabbing another defender and running him over there, kind of creating that switch in real time. They're very good at doing that. So I think part of the offensive success of the Knicks is going to be how can they get them to not communicate that as well, or where Wemby's in the prime spot to defend the paint just by simply handing off Josh Hart to somebody else if he goes and sets the screen. It's a chess match, I think, for Mike Brown and the Knicks offense.
I would imagine the Knicks are probably going to have to play fast to try to get some cross matches, get them out of their ideal positions, right?
Yeah, look, fortunately for the Knicks, their defense is playing at peak level. So that, you know, they're playing elite level on both ends. It's not just the offense, which has been incredible. Their defense equally is good. So now that means more opportunities, get the ball off the glass and go, at least put an early surge up the floor to create cross matches, and to be able to attack before everybody's back looking at the ball and then Wemby's back where he wants to be, because every guy on the Knicks, and particularly the main ball handlers like Brunson, are going to tell you, it doesn't look like this against any other team when he's back there. So the sooner you can get up the floor, get into early hits, early actions, definitely going to benefit the Knicks.
Now, you mentioned the ball handlers on the Knicks. One of the thoughts on my mind when it comes to this series and how it could result is that we just saw the Thunder take the Spurs to 7 games. Without Jalen Williams, without A.J. Mitchell. And the Knicks, top to bottom in their rotation, is full of ball handlers, guys who can create from different areas of the floor, different skill sets, different styles. Mikal Bridges, pull-up master. OG Anunoby can attack a closeout with power, can hit spot-up threes. Of course, Karl-Anthony Towns can play make from the middle of the floor, and Brunson is going to do what he does, never mind the role players off the bench as well. the Knicks feel like they have the formula on paper with their points of attack all over the floor to try to attack the Spurs in different ways.
I totally agree with that. Like, you have to have a script against this team. And so the two things for me that are going to travel well, if you have to go on the road and win a game, and also just against an elite team, you need balance in terms of who can attack. And the Knicks right now have more balance than they've had at any point since Jalen Brunson came to New York. And that's been a big part of this run. It hasn't been about Jalen Brunson just putting a team on his back. Like, their balance across the board, to have five starters in particular in this kind of offensive rhythm at the same time, is almost unprecedented. And so that is good for them, because you can attack from different areas. Even something as simple as if the Spurs are going to pick you up 75 feet, which they like to do, with whether it's Castle, Champagne will do it, Vassell will do it, Dylan Harper will do it, Fox, you're Jalen Brunson, you don't have to work against that. Give it up, particularly if Wemby is going to be back at the top of the key on the other end of the floor. Let Josh Hart advance the ball. No problem. Nothing lost there. Jalen Brunson, conserve your energy. Now go get it back into possession in the area of the floor where you can attack. So I think that their balance being this good coming into the series against a team like this defensively gives them their best shot.
Is there anything the Knicks should be trying to do to get Wemby onto Cat? Is there any advantage to the Knicks side if they try to that?
It's easier said than done. And I don't know, like, here's the thing with Karl Anthony Towns. I think if Wemby's guarding him, the one thing that I think is an advantage for them, if they can create that matchup, Wemby's natural inclination from anywhere on the floor, flood to the paint on penetration, right? Flood to when he sees it. It's just his body's going to, like most shot blockers, they're running to the lane. Well, now you're guarding one of the elite shooting seven-footers in this league. It's a big recovery, whether it's for Wemby or somebody else smaller where Cat's not affected. You'd want Wemby on that closeout. That's a lot of ground to cover, because this guy's a threat from 25 feet. That's a lot for him to be able to do. And the other area that's good for the Knicks, if they can get that matchup, on the closeout, if it is Wemby to Cat, Cat is really good at putting his head down against closeouts, getting his shoulder into you and drawing fouls on the way to the rim. I think you got to get Wemby off the floor if you're the Knicks, if you can find a way to get this guy in foul trouble. It's hard because he's so long, he can back up and still create havoc. But Karl Anthony Towns is that guy that could put his head down on a straight line drive, get his body into you as you're closing out at him, and draw that contact that could lead to a foul at the rim. And I think it's an important part of the series.
The anti-Chet.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Oh, no question about it. That was particularly the way Chet finished out. You know, shook doesn't begin to describe like what he was experiencing. That's not going to be the case, I don't think, with Karl Anthony Towns. He's going to be ready for that challenge, and he's got to be smart about how he goes about attacking him. If he sees he has a leverage advantage, you've got to get into his body, and you've got to figure out a way to force him to hit you so that maybe you can get a foul on him. And certainly, it's a better way to negate shot blocking anyway.
For a guy in Karl Anthony Towns who'd never had a defensive reputation, well, the Wolves beat the Nuggets with Cat defending Jokic in that series, Gobert helping off ball a lot. In this playoff, Cat has been outstanding defensively. What has Cat done well in this postseason on the defensive end of the floor?
First of all, I want to give him a pat on the back for this, because I think a big part of defense and the way you're regarded is ability to finish possessions, which means securing defensive rebounds. To Karl Anthony Towns' credit, even nights throughout the regular season, before they figured out this offense, and he feels more included now, and he feels really good about himself, even though his shots and points came down, they've accomplished something strange for a 20-point scorer. Like, less shots, less points. Cool with that? Yeah, if I could touch the ball 20 more times and be appreciated, absolutely. So they've pulled it off somehow. But for me, so let's start with that to answer your question. The defensive rebounding, consistent, always. This guy's going to give you 11 on a bad night, 15 on a good night. Pencil it in. It's a big part of their defensive possessions. But I also think as the playoffs have worn on, he's just gotten a lot more judicious about how hard he's hedging on ball screens and picking up those cheap fouls when he hedges too hard and then the guard turns a corner and he bumps his hip and they hit him with that foul. He gets a couple of those a game. It takes him off the floor. Much smarter about that. Just been very active. Their whole team just so connected on both ends. Chemistry's off the charts. They're having fun. Winning kind of leads to that. And now they just have this incredible belief that they're going to figure it out on a given night on one end of the floor or the other.
Why do you feel like everybody's picking the Spurs in this series? It seems like most pundits are leaning towards San Antonio pretty heavily.
I think a lot of people are still falling into the regular season mindset. And even if you went back 6 weeks ago, which the narrative was, whoever wins the West is your NBA champion. And there was a time even Denver was even included in that, when people were like, well, Denver, San Antonio, OKC, whoever wins it, foregone conclusion. Because you looked at the East, No Tatum. Okay, so Boston was in a different category. You didn't really believe in Cleveland because of what happened to them the last couple of years. Detroit, you looked at and you knew there were holes offensively. That left the Knicks. You knew they were a good team, but you felt like any of those four could beat each other. So I think what had to happen for a lot of people, it certainly did for me, was not only do you have to win the East in convincing fashion, you have to play at such an elite level that you actually now convince people that there is a worthy opponent coming out of the East to go toe-to-toe with either of those two teams. And the Knicks have created that. That's what they've developed into. And I think some people are still just stuck in that idea of what they had all year, that whoever wins the West is your NBA champion. And maybe it ends up that way. I'm certainly not here to predict anything. I think we're going to get a great series, compelling. We'll not be surprised if either of these teams wins this.
I mean, I think the Knicks are undoubtedly a worthy opponent. And I think we are going to set up for a potentially epic series.
Yeah, I think it could be.
I mean, it's just so intriguing from so many different levels. I mean, we didn't even talk about like offensive rebounding.
Yeah.
We saw the Thunder, as that series wore on, try to like picking up second chances. The Knicks are one of the better offensive rebounding
teams. And
that's
why Mitchell Robinson is so important, because we don't know what that's going to look like. He's going to play, obviously. His hand's banged up. It's not going to affect his shooting. We know that.
Well, he should do the granny shot.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. But can he grab
the time to start, Tim?
I wonder, can he grab the ball with two hands and secure it? Right? Can he catch a lob? So we'll see. But, you know, and he had 10 offensive rebounds, I believe, in a game against them. Like, major part against this team, you better be able to get second chances because their initial defense is so good. So think of the number of possessions and games that Mitchell Robinson has flipped a game in an 8-minute stretch because of the way he has demoralized the team because they can't secure a defensive rebound. He's a big factor in this series. If he's limited because of the injury in any way where his minutes come down, that's a big blow to the Knicks.
And the other thing I worry about with the Spurs is that De'Aaron Fox was limited very clearly the last round against the Thunder.
Yeah.
They got through it. They won it with Fox looking like Mike Conley. He looked older. He just didn't. Not as quick. And then you match that up end game situations. If it's close down the stretch, Jalen Brunson is better than anybody in those clutch time moments.
I think the one thing about Jalen Brunson, that's to your point, I think we get close finishes, right? So I think they won't all be.
God, please, not all blowouts.
No. Maybe you get one either way that's not compelling in the fourth quarter. I don't know, maybe. I think we're going to get 3-4, maybe more, really close finishes where 5 minutes to go, you don't know who's going to win the game. And you've got Jalen Brunson on your team. That gives the Knicks great confidence because he plays a grounded game. So it's more difficult, number one, to wear him out. He's not exploding off the floor to shoot deep jump shots where you're using your legs the entire game. He plays a grounded game. It's balance, it's footwork, it's strength, it's IQ, and it's touch. That's how he gets you. And it's very difficult to get him off his spots. And we also know as he goes up to shoot that ball, very few players in this league are more certain of the outcome in those moments than Jalen Brunson is. There's no self-doubt whatsoever. So just get them into a one-possession game with 5 minutes to go. That's what the Knicks feel like. They've got the guy that can settle matters if we're in that position.
And I mean, and ultimately, like you talk about shooting, we talk about rebounding with Brunson. SGA, his efficiency cratered in that 7-game series against the Spurs.
Really did.
Forced him out of the paint, didn't get to the line as often, turned him into a mid-range shooter. They basically turned his shot distribution.
And the other thing was his quick hitters weren't there. So he's so used to just coming up the floor, quick brush screen, and now he's got this one-on-one, go, 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 stop, pull-up jumper.
And then Wemby's there now.
8 seconds are off the clock. That's not what was happening in that last series. The Spurs are so good with their initial defense. He wasn't getting the quick hitter. Now he was giving it up, and without as many ball handlers on the floor for them because guys were out, he was getting the ball back a second time, 7 on the clock. Now you got to go again. That is incredibly exhausting. I thought he got worn down in each of those games. He was unbelievable in Game 7 with his tough shot making, but from 55% in the regular season to 40, that for a player with that kind of usage rate, you've basically won the series right there. If you're the Spurs, that's going to be their task in trying to do that to Jalen Brunson. See if they can accomplish it. They're a great team. Both of these teams equally good on both ends of the floor. As you can tell, I'm pretty excited about it. I can't wait to get going.
I can't wait, Tim. I'm so excited. Thanks. Can't wait to hear you on the broadcast. Thank
Appreciate
you so much for joining me.
Anytime.
All right, thank you to Tim Legger for joining me. Coming up, we got Jared Weiss talking about the Spurs side of things. How does San Antonio win the series? All right, now joining me to talk about the Spurs from The Athletic, Jared Weiss. Jared, what's up, man?
Howdy. Welcome to town.
Good to see you, my old friend. Let's talk about the Spurs. I just talked to Tim Legler earlier about what happens if the Knicks win the series. So same question for you. If the Spurs win the series, how did it happen?
think it's the start of the countdown to goatdom for Wemby if it happened, right? That means that Victor, you know, it's a different challenge for him in this series than what he faced before. Portland, Minnesota, Oklahoma, they beat him up. They had bigs that really wanted to battle him in the trenches, but there was always a shooter that he could help off of or something like that. In this series, that is the case with Josh Hart, but the Knicks are going to play five out a lot, and they might be able to force Victor to run in circles on defense. And the big thing with Victor is that he needs to be able to kind of take a breather on defense most of the time and have that position on the low man where he's, you know, helping off of that corner. And that allows him to get some breaks during live play so that he can go balls to the wall in transition and on offense. And if the Knicks can force him to move around a lot more on defense, that could tire him out and that could reduce his effectiveness. And credit to him, he generally has been really impactful in fourth quarters in this playoff run. That's kind of like the one antidote I feel like the Knicks have that could give them the advantage.
So it's Wemby solving those questions, yes, in other words. And I do think that's spot on. I do think this is a different type of series for the Spurs than all of the others. And obviously, I mean, every team is different. I mean, that's not like breaking news with the way the Knicks play. But I do think one of my concerns for San Antonio is the fact that OKC Thunder just took them to seven. No A.J. Mitchell, no Jalen Williams, two of their three best ball handlers, and still took them to seven games. Obviously, they're the defending champions. You give them that credit. Obviously, they have a tremendous defense, and they do a lot of other things well. But the Knicks do have a very unique ability to put five guys on the floor that can all shoot, dribble, pass, offer versatile defense as well on that end. And that is something that's new for the Spurs to have to counter against. And so for the Spurs defense, which has been unbelievable throughout the postseason, can that be sustained against this Knicks team where there really are no weak links?
I think so. Yeah, I do believe in the Spurs' persistence and their effort level enough that they can handle whatever the Knicks throw at them. I don't think there's going to be an issue of being able to keep up with what the Knicks do. It's just more of a fact that the Knicks probably will hit a lot of tough shots over them. And that's the big thing that New York has to offer, right? The Knicks are an elite shooting team and they're shooting elite. And the Spurs don't have that. They cannot keep up with the three-point barrage. We'll see if they can. They can try, but they don't have four really good shooters out there at a time. And the Spurs are really reliant upon transition offense. Like, that's where their bread and butter is. They get rebounds, they get out and run, and that can be a lot trickier, especially because, you know, Wemby's big advantage is he gets boxed in, so he'll go behind the rebounder most of the time, and a rebound will usually fall into his hands. But when you're shooting a lot of threes, a lot of those bounce over his head, and you kind of lose that advantage. So, like, the Knicks shooting is going to be the huge variable in the series.
OKC did a solid job defending Wemby in the series. Do you think the Knicks are better equipped or worse equipped to defend Wemby?
I don't think anyone's well equipped like the Thunder are, right? I mean, Hartenstein did a phenomenal job battling with him. Jalen Williams did a good job. And then their guards were just so good at giving him just all sorts of little picks, like all these gnats flying around him. They took away a lot of his dribble drive ability because he couldn't get into those gaps because Cason Wallace and Alex Caruso would be there waiting. It made it hard for Victor to dribble the ball in that series. And I think that the Knicks don't have that level of pestering available to them. And unless they have Mitch Robinson out there, they don't have the guy that can really move him underneath the hoop in quite the way that Hartenstein can.
So you're not a believer that OG Anunoby is the Wemby stopper, as some have proclaimed him to be.
I think if you're looking for someone that can check every single box on Wemby, maybe OG's the best for that. But as far as like a collective effort, especially when Hartenstein was out there, I don't think you can really top what OKC was able to do against Victor.
Now, tell me this. De'Aaron Fox, the Spurs get through the Thunder with De'Aaron Fox looking like a shell of his former self.
Until
the very end. But even then, he's still not quite as speedy, as quick, as explosive off the dribble. Is there any word around De'Aaron Fox's ability to get back to that with some of the days off that they had?
I would imagine that helps, right? Because they were going every other game in that Thunder series. I thought he looked great in that game seven. Like right away, bat out of hell driving on people. He had two steals like right at the very beginning. That was a great performance from him. I don't know what they did to get him at that level before the game, but I'm sure it took a lot to be able to get him to that point. And he has a few extra days to recover. Maybe this is a, you know, a progression from here rather than one little blip. I don't really know. But I can't imagine with the timing of recovery that they have in this series that he's going to be as hobbled as he was over the course of the OKC series.
I think it's an underrated X factor in San Antonio's favor, truly. I mean, obviously we get a lot of time off before game one for the Knicks, a little bit of time off for the Spurs. It's better than one day. And then there's only one day of rest between games one and two, but there's a lot of time before game three. Yeah. And there's one day before game four, and then a lot of time before game five. And then the whole rest of the series, if it goes that deep, is pretty spaced out. And so for the Spurs, we saw early in that series against the Thunder, Castle, some of the turnover issues in games one and two. Fox being back and Fox, in theory, looking more like the De'Aaron Fox that we know, that also gives the Spurs another point of attack, another way to create off the dribble against this Knicks defense that is playing at an unbelievable level.
Yeah.
But they also haven't faced a team with as many of many points of attack as San Antonio has either.
I mean, listen, the competition that the Knicks faced to this route, it's just not even close to what the Spurs have. Like, I don't think it's even in the same stratosphere. The Spurs are way, way better than the teams that they face. So it's going to be a much tougher challenge. I think the big thing with the Spurs is that, you know, Castle had 20 turnovers, a record 20 turnovers in that, those first few games. And then Fox came back and he barely had any turnovers after that. And the reason why is their system has always been Fox is the guy that sets the table. And then Castle and Harper can play off of that. And once Castle was able to get back to that primarily, then he was able to attack with an advantage early and work his way to where he's comfortable and kind of play more in the cadence that he's used to. And also, I think just over the course of that series, he figured out his timing on his drives because his times are very driving dependent. His drives are very timing dependent. It's all about like slow steps and right time for contact and all that. He's not beating anybody to the rim. So like he finally found that comfort zone once Fox was out there to take the just like the initiation and then like the reset responsibility off of the table for him.
One of the issues with the Spurs against the Thunder was the non-Wemby minutes with Cornette out on the floor. Obviously, Cornette had the moment of the series with his block in game seven, one of the best plays in the playoffs we've seen in recent years. But for the most part, his minutes during that series were not so good. Do you think there's any reason to believe those non-Wemby minutes will fare better against this Knicks style?
It's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that they at least like they know they can play and drop coverage a little bit more comfortably against this team just because I just feel like the Knicks offense presents a little bit more of the traditional drop coverage responses than you would usually see. While like OKC, it's like once you let Shea get into the mid-range, you're really kind of screwed there. While like with Brunson, because Brunson is such a demon shooting the ball from deep, even if lately he hasn't been, I think they want to get him into that area anyway. So I think Luke just kind of backpedaling in coverage and doing his usual Luke thing probably is the right opportunity. And also, when Luke had to battle Hartenstein was just like such a body mover. And I guess Robinson probably is, but it's like Robinson's like center of gravity is maybe higher and similar to where Luke's is, where like Hartenstein was good at just like getting underneath Luke and moving him out of the way. So I feel like this matchup works a little bit better for Cornette, but it's kind of just like a matter of is Cornette going to play with the level of intensity and fear that he played with in those last couple of games?
For sure. I think, I mean, even like you said, game six, last few games, he was a plus in that game. He was better in that game. So I think for San Antonio, it's going to be fascinating, in my opinion, Jared, to see how in which we see also Dylan Harper and Stephon Castle, as these secondary creators behind De'Aaron Fox, manage their opportunities on this biggest stage. So far, they don't feel like young guys at all. There's been no fear. Dylan Harper hit one of the clutchest shots of Game 7 with a pull-up three-pointer in the final minutes of that game. Castle obviously makes so many big plays in so many different categories, but the finals are a different monster. So I think when you talk about inexperience, we haven't felt it yet with the Spurs. In the slightest. They just won a game seven on the road against the defending champions. There's been none of that. If you're a Knicks fan, I would hope that that's one of the things that pops up here in this series. I don't think it will, but that's one of the things that I think a Knicks fan in the back of their mind is hoping. Hopefully they start feeling like kids.
I think it was a thing in that Thunder series.
You do.
You saw it in the middle of that series when the Thunder were beating them to 50-50 balls. Like they were, honestly, it was kind of like that even in game seven, where if there was a 50-50 ball, there's a loose ball, there's a Thunder player on the ground head first going for it, while sometimes the Spurs are just trying to pick it up. And that, I think, understanding the value of possession was higher for OKC. And that's where experience comes in. It's the experience factor is not a scared thing. Like Dylan Harper.
Well, Chet Holmgren it was.
Sure, well, yeah. But like Dylan Harper's blood pressure is 120 over 80. It doesn't change. I mean, I haven't measured it myself, but I would imagine.
I was going to say, his nurse?
Yeah, his resting heart rate is 2. Like this guy is calm, right? And Castle is just going to be an animal like and go crazy.
Over 70. I guess I'm better than Bill.
Hey, look at that. Maybe we have to put you out there, buddy. You're like a human beta blocker. But like Harper and Castle, they might get out of rhythm, but I don't think they're scared of being themselves. And that's when people talk about fear, it's about like what we saw from Chet, which I mean, I don't want to say Chet was scared, but like Chet did not play like himself.
He was scared.
I'll let you say it. You're a hot
Chet Holmgren was terrified.
He played like that for sure.
Yes.
And I didn't see any of that from the Spurs. There was nobody who stepped out of their game because they didn't feel like they were able to play their game. And that's a credit to Mitch Johnson and the coaching staff there. They've really gotten these guys believing in themselves. So they're at least like still executing who they are. But against OKC, the attention to detail was in OKC's favor for a while. And the just extra little amount of effort in the hustle was there. And that's really what I think experience comes down to at this point.
I think that's a good framing. It's not just about like you're playing NCAA football and the crowd, the meter with the wide receivers is shaking. You ever play that game?
No, but now I kind of
Like, it's like with the crowd, like on a road game, like you'd be nervous. Your receivers would drop passes, run the wrong route. It's not necessarily that. It's that attention to detail you're talking about as well. But also that is just a pure talent thing in some ways too with OKC. They are amazing at reading the trajectory of the ball. That is a preparation thing too. That is just a pure size thing with Hartenstein and Holmgren out there and Lu Dort and these tough wings. The Knicks also are a great offensive rebounding team. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be one of the real keys to this series as well. The Spurs, with the way in which they play defense, switching off ball, allowing Wemby to stay near the rim as much as possible, can Josh Hart, can OG Anunoby, can Mikal Bridges, can these guys fly in there and create second chance opportunities? Can they get their offensive rebound rate to 35%, to 40% on their misses, creating second chances? Or can the Spurs contain that and have their best rebounding series of the entire playoffs? And if they do, I like San Antonio's chances of putting a stamp on those possessions and then turning that defense into offense.
Yeah, because I mean, the Spurs rebounding opportunities usually are Wemby holds down a box out and then somebody like Castle or Champagne comes and flies in. And usually they have the size and speed and power advantage. But when you got Bridges and OG and some of these other guys out there, like they can win those aerial battles too. So that's definitely going to be a thing. I mean, listen, man, I've been around the league for a while. You know, we started out together, right? I think as much as I've learned by watching Synergy over and over the years, you got to want it more. Like it's the stupid basic stuff that they're going to say on Inside the NBA. Like that really is it in the end. You got to freaking want it more, man. Like that's where it comes down to. It doesn't matter that Mikal Bridges is like 5 inches taller than Steph Castle. Just like who's going to make the first movement? Who's going to go harder? Who's going to be ready to hit in the air for like, that's what it comes down to in these series.
I mean, I think like in regards to the draft, I think about this all the time. You look at the Spurs, you look at the Thunder, you look at the Knicks. What do all these guys getting minutes have in common? They're tough and they're smart. All of them have that in common. And there's a level of skill involved, of course, too. But if you don't have toughness and you don't have some level of intelligence in order to play at this level, to make quick decisions, read the floor quickly, adapt, play different schemes, make adjustments, and be able to respond to those, you're not getting minutes at this stage of the postseason. And so I think you see these two teams built in completely different ways. The Knicks, very much through trades, very much through some risky acquisitions that they did. And then you look at the Spurs through just masterful drafting, for the most part. All of their acquisitions through pro personnel decisions or draft decisions has been targeting those types of players. And that's what we're going to see in this series. It's just a bunch of tough, smart, skilled players going at each other for 4 to 7 games. And I can't wait.
I mean, credit to the Spurs. They got the most talented player ever, I guess you could say, in a certain way, or the most talented guy since LeBron, we'll say, with Victor. And they completely prioritized not guys that fit in the traditional sense. Because remember, before the season, it wasn't just the fact that they had 3-point guards. It was the fact that they had 3-point guards who were not knockdown shooters.
You don't
they were
have to tell me guys. All about that.
Yeah, right?
I was leading the same charge. Thing.
I remember being like, people aren't really sure if Steph Castle's really a point guard. Like, now look at him. He's averaging like 7 assists per game. they got guys that had the determination and the growth factor, and they play their ass off. And I think also people focus too much on offense and not enough on defense. They're an amazing fit defensively next to Victor. But they got guys that grow and improve. And like, look how Dylan Harper shot like 95% from the corners, like in the second half of the season. Like, he's been a pretty good shooter and has continued to be a pretty solid shooter on low volume. The Spurs also recognize that they didn't need guys necessarily that can shoot, that handle the ball. They needed guys that could be deep dribble penetrators, that had a floater game that forced teams to respect it. And therefore, it opened up opportunities to throw over the top to Victor. And so the Spurs have ironically crunched the floor down because they have the guy that can play over everybody. And they just had to make sure that they had some shooters in the corners. And Fasel and Champagne have done a very nice job handling that. So they are a perfectly balanced team. And the only thing they don't have balance is shooting above the top. And that's what the Knicks have, and that's why the Knicks have a really good chance of winning the series.
My prediction for the series, Spurs in seven. I think we're going to get an epic. I think we're going to get a lot of close, competitive games down to the wire. But ultimately, in the end, I think Victor Wembanyama changes so much of what the opponent is on both ends of the floor, and that's going to give San Antonio the edge in the series, despite some of these edges the Knicks have. Shooting advantage, they have a lot of creation. They're going to attack the offensive boards. They have a very great defense as well. I just think that Wemby advantage is going to prove to be too significant to overcome for New York, and the Spurs take this series.
Drumroll, you guys ready? You ready? You're ready over there? Spurs in seven. Come on. Yeah. I agree. I've been saying like Spurs in 6.5. I'm a little bit leaning towards the Spurs getting it in 6 and I am the Knicks getting it in 7. I wanted to go 7 because game 7 of the finals. This is one of the most exciting finals of my lifetime. I mean, just like the next great star that everyone in the world wants to watch versus New York and the Knicks and the revival.
And a fun Knicks team. Yeah. It's not just any Knicks team. Well, it's fun.
They were my favorite team in the league this year. These were my two favorite teams. I mean, I covered one of them, but like, these are my two favorite teams in the league this year. I'm sure most people would probably agree. The Knicks, the story around the Knicks, the personalities there, the way they play has just been so much fun. And then with the Spurs, it's like watching the Wemby evolution happen in record time is crazy. Like, when Wemby started the season, he was not that good. We were talking about how like he's super impactful, but like his skill set is like so raw, he's having trouble finishing games.
And it's limited.
He was coming off the bench at one point because he was recovering from injury. And now the guy just had 40 and 20 in game one. It hit one of the most iconic shots of all time. His evolution this season is, I've never seen anything like it. It's been special to watch, and their locker room is hilarious, and they have a good time and they love each other. And like these two teams, I think, epitomize what you want out of a basketball team. And they're the last two standing.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely do, man. I thought the scene after the Spurs won game 7, all the guys rallying around Wemby, you can see the love and respect that they have for him as a 22-year-old leader as well, the way they look at him when he talks in the huddles as well, and the way they rally around him. It truly is.
Also, the fact that he could hug all 12 guys on the active roster at the same time, that helps too. He just like reached all the way around him and stretched out like he was an incredible.
He did really hug like 7 guys.
Yeah, he hugged like 5 guys at the same time. It was great. You're probably going to fit a few more in there too.
Seriously, the whole coaching staff could have got in there
seriously
too. Jared.
That's leadership, baby.
Jared, keep up the amazing work. I'm so happy for you, man. Like you said, we've been doing this together since 2013 in Boston.
This guy used to come on my show. I had to tell him that you're good on camera and he wouldn't do it. And now look at him. We got all these fancy cameras here and all these producers, and you look sharp too. Look at that. I like the way the beard looks.
You're the best, man. I like the way your beard looks too, Jared.
Yeah, nice beard. Beard bro.
We're making all the listeners cringe. Jared, thank you so much for joining me. Keep up the amazing work, man.
Thank you, buddy.
Big thank you to Jared Weiss and Tim Legger for joining me on today's podcast. I'll be back again after Wednesday night's game 1 of the NBA Finals between the Spurs and the Knicks. Can't wait for it. Hope you'll be there as well. Thank you to Emmy, Addy, Robert, the whole Yahoo Sports team for producing today's episode from here in San Antonio. Talk to you on Wednesday night. Enjoy the finals, everybody.